Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey folks, it's Matt Zachary, and welcome to Vax On, a weekly segment of my podcast, Out of Patience, right here on the Offscript Media Network.
Hey, I'm Allura Nanos. I'm a lawyer, a journalist, a mom of a teenage narcoleptic, and a professional big mouth.
Lou and I go back 30 years as best friends, and we're here to have fun and bring you a layperson's guide to what the hell just happened this week in healthcare as America gets its vax on and shows COVID the door.
Matt gets me. He knows I'm tired, annoyed, and sometimes pushed to the brink by the intense chaos of our lives right now. We're here together to learn, complain, and include you in the conversation.
So join us on Twitter at VaxOnPod and share your stories and grievances using the hashtag VaxOn. Conspiracy theorists and haters shall be neutralized on site.
All right, Matt, let's get at it. Andrew, it's time for VaxOn, and you are back with me.
It is spectacular to be vax on with you.
I love this. And we're doing this not with Matt today. It's going to be just the two of us. And it's, you know, very intimate.
Yes, it's intimate. And, you know, I feel like, you know, our rock is somehow very, very far away, off in Turks and Caicos, perhaps.
Yes, he's taking his vaxcation.
It's amazing. Congratulations to you, Matt.
Yeah, the pictures look great. Looks like everyone's having a good time and not a mask in sight.
I got a picture of them in a dune buggy.
A dune buggy?
Yeah, I assume they survived.
That sounds very adventurous for our friend Matt.
It's true. It's true. He's striking out.
I'm, in fact, not in a dune buggy at all.
Yes, I'm surrounded by pillows in the guest room of my in-laws' house in Lutherville, Maryland.
You know, I have a question. So you're on, you know, like a family vacation situation.
That's right.
Are you seeing a difference in COVID protocols in Maryland?
At this point, I would have to say no. I think that essentially when I walk into a business now, I do still look around and see whether or not my masklessness is acceptable.
Yeah, me too. Right. You look and you kind of like read the room with the masks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Read the room. Very important to do, no matter what it's associated with. But, you know, there's also helpful signs, right? Masks are required for people who are not yet fully vaccinated, and so on and so forth. But I think it's quite similar in New York to what I am finding in Maryland.
That's good to know. I'm about to learn, you know, how society feels about COVID right now. It's very interesting. So as you may know from talking before and listening to every episode of Vax On, I play in a symphony orchestra. And we, of course, have been on hiatus for, you know, 18 months. And we just recently came back and started performing again, which is awesome. So we did the sort of safest and most acceptable thing to, you know, the masses, which was we had free outdoor performances, which is great. Except we have a performance tomorrow, and the forecast is total garbage. So we're like, shit, like we have to move this huge concert, which likely would have drawn probably somewhere around 1,000 to 1,500 people.
That's
Yeah. So now we're moving it back to the place we normally perform, which is inside in a concert hall. However, the whole thing was envisioned to be totally COVID safe, you know, not really concern anyone because you're outside with lots of room to spread out. So now we're forced to go inside, but because it's free and it doesn't require ticketing, we have no way of knowing who is going to come.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
This is fascinating. It's a great, big, beautiful experiment.
It is.
You really are about to find out.
Right, like if people care or not.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really interesting because, you know, we plan to do this outside. So, of course, to quickly move it inside required all kinds of logistical planning. And then it was sort of like the last step that we said, oh, my God, do we have to have any COVID protocols or anything? And you know what's really funny is that I'm used to dealing with local municipalities and planning rehearsals and things like that. So I already had to plan for the fire code, and I had to give our COVID protocols for rehearsals that are coming up in the future. But because this concert is being rescheduled at the very last minute to be inside, no one asked me for anything like that. Uh-huh. So it was sort of like, when you have time to plan, we're going to be really careful COVID-wise. But when it's an emergency, just do whatever. Which, I mean, makes me a little uncomfortable. But I have no idea how to handle this. And I have no idea what to expect. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what does the audience look like? Are they masked? Do people sit 5 seats away from each other? Are they going to expect us to do anything? Do we have to take their temperature? Like, I have no idea. But I'm going to find out within the next, 36 hours.
So the performance happens in tomorrow evening, I guess.
Yep.
And so let's set our baseline statistics right here in this episode. Oh. You were anticipating a little more than 1,000 people?
Yeah, about 1,000 people.
Right. And so we are going to see how many people show up at this performance. The new venue, how many people can it hold?
It holds 1,300 people.
Okay.
And then 100 people on the stage.
Okay.
So, that's a lot of people, but it's not a huge place. So, it's a regular auditorium.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. And it'll be really interesting. I suspect there will be a lot of chaos as audience members enter. But we're a volunteer organization and we don't really have staff members to field these concerns. So I don't know what's going to happen. They're going to have to figure it out.
Well, I'm sure that you will issue a full report for us next week.
A full report.
I am looking forward to it.
Yes, indeed. And what's happening with you? You're on vacation, on a working vacation.
That's right. A working vacation this week. Next week, I will be out of pocket camping with my family on Assateague Island.
An island
on the Atlantic coast that on which since the 1600s, wild horses have lived.
And they cannot drag you away.
They can't. They can't. And Bono wants to know who's going to ride them and so on.
Who is going to ride them?
Yeah, who? He wants to know.
I cannot wait to hear about it. I am insanely jealous. I am hoping to have the same vacation, the Andrew McDowell Memorial vacation. No, not memorial. What is it? The commemorative. The Andrew McDowell like commemorative Assateague vacation. I would like to have the same vacation in when it's not so freaking hot outside.
I'll provide a bit of a report as to how it went at my next opportunity. The next time
I cannot wait.
I join you.
But we have to get started on our real stories here.
Yes, let's talk about the vaccination of the nation.
I'm going to level with you. I'm here to report that I was wrong. I will admit it.
What were you wrong about?
So I had said in a past episode that New Jersey was still offering a remote school option next year.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I said that is because that is what I heard from my district maybe a couple of months ago. I remember some sort of official word coming out where they said, we've decided we're going to still offer the remote option next year. As it turns out, I missed an executive order by the New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy, who actually said that we are not offering remote options in the entire state next year, that is not going to be a widespread option where you can just decide to opt out of school.
Right.
And I think that that's very interesting because my understanding was that the district had originally decided to keep this remote option live because they felt that it really worked well for certain students, especially students with medical needs or learning needs, not even really exactly because of COVID, but that it just sort of worked better. And they acknowledged that some people still had a lot of fear about COVID and they were kind of like, listen, it's working fairly well. Let's just continue to allow this as a possibility for whoever wants it. And now the governor has said, nope, even if you think it's a good idea, you're not allowed to do it.
Yeah, that's a big deal. And it obviously is extremely challenging for teachers to provide for the hybrid model. And I'm sure that that consideration alone is what led them to eliminate the option, even for people who were having experiences that are unrelated to COVID-19.
I totally agree. I mean, I have seen teachers try to teach remotely, and as good of a job as many of them are doing, it's really hard. It takes a lot of effort. And in certain kinds of things, like particularly art class, music class, gym class, the end result is really not good compared to what it would be live.
Gym class is hilarious. Yeah.
Hilarious. My children were slamming themselves against the wall in their bedrooms. I came upstairs screaming at them, like, what the hell are you guys doing up here? And they were like, we're doing Tabata in gym today.
It's gym. It's just gym.
I was like terrified of what I was going to find in there. And it turns out it was gym class. But it was really funny, actually. You know, so I get thinking, you know, that live really needs to be the main thing. But I'm really interested in how this came about and what the thought process is in terms of essentially telling a district you're not even allowed to offer it.
Right.
You know, and how do they think it's going to go over? Did they feel that parents would have opted to keep their kids remote even though it's not necessary? Like, was that the fear? I don't know.
It seems that way. You know, and one of the points that I wanted to that I kind of regretted not raising during last week's episode related to this topic is that, you know, I think Matt and I are in of two different minds when it comes to this, because we are talking about the set of the people in our population who cannot currently be vaccinated.
Yeah, and that makes it different.
Right. Now, by next year, most people think that we will have had the opportunity to vaccinate kids under 12. The anticipation is that Pfizer, I believe Moderna, has also made a similar announcement that they'll be offering up data and filing for emergency use with the FDA by September. Next year, it seems reasonable to make this type of an announcement. But for people who are upset about the fact that the rest of society has opened up, and yet during the final months of this recent school year, the schools didn't open up, my thinking is that we do have these variants out there. And so data that we collected on infections among children leading up to this point isn't necessarily as dependable as we'd like it to be, particularly when we're actually seeing a lot of new infections taking place in countries like Israel and Scotland. These are two of the countries that have provided data about the Delta variant appearing in kids between the ages of 5 and 12. Now, of course, those kids are people who are spreading the virus more than they are people who are experiencing severe symptoms.
Sure, but spreading the virus is still a big deal.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Of course it is. Even though the people who, the adults who are going to be catching COVID-19 at this point are by and large people who have decided not to get vaccinated, I'm told that they are still people, even if they are foolish. I'm told by my producer that
that they still count as humans.
That people who choose not to be vaccinated still count as humans.
Right. We still probably would like it if they didn't die.
And even though they don't believe they're in danger, we should still attempt to protect them.
Right. Certainly, legally speaking, that's one of always the most difficult challenges when it comes to legislating, which is and any kind of rulemaking to say, how far do we go to protecting people who just don't want to be protected from anything? And yeah. And it's always a tough call to be making rules to benefit a group of people who simply don't want to be benefited.
Yes.
That's always difficult to strike the right balance. And people have very valid, but very divergent views about how to do that.
Yeah, the calculus has changed now that most people in the United States anyway, I think this applies almost exclusively to this country, but the calculus changed when vaccines became widely available. Because prior to the availability of vaccines, it was not simply a matter of individual freedom. Because if you chose to act in a way that made it more likely that you would catch and become a spreader of the virus, then you are not just endangering yourself. You're endangering other people.
Right. So we can't just make the rules as if it only affects you, because it affects everyone.
Right.
But now that's changed a bit, because like sort of everyone, or at least generally many people, are vaccinated. So, I mean, it makes it really confusing. I'm very glad that I'm not in charge of making these rules.
Oh, my goodness. Me too.
There's no good answer that's going to make everyone happy. And politicians really, you know, are supposed to make people happy so that they get reelected. My understanding is that's their only job, is to make people like them. And this seems impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is so difficult to not look back with regret and think about how things might have been different.
Yeah. You can't have regrets. This is a no regret zone.
Yes, it's true.
I only regret that I said the wrong thing about New Jersey last time, because apparently I just missed it when the governor told us that my school district was wrong.
When was this announcement made? Was this made the week before last?
It was made in May, I think. Like,
it was
in late
May.
Yeah, okay. I think it was made in late May. And I just didn't notice it, because I was just operating on what came from my district, which came, I think, probably in April. And we actually, the other thing that's interesting is my district just sent out their plan for September for school. And they already told us that everyone is going to have to wear masks, which I hate, not because it's not safe. Like, yes, it's a great way to protect people. I really just hate the idea of kids being in school in masks all day. But I'm going to go out and say, you know, they're mitigating the risk, and that's very important and very good. I wonder, though, if it's sort of early for them to be making that type of blanket rule, because they may find in September, hey, you know, it turns out that 90% of our student body has been vaccinated. If you're talking about a middle school, where, you know, kids are mainly 12 and up.
Right.
Or certainly high schools where everyone is 12 and up. So I wonder if, even though they've already announced this, if it is going to change before school even starts, or if it's going to change after school starts. Because this was the case during COVID, that the school district kept coming out with plans, and then they would be like, never mind, not that plan. Here's a different plan. And they would drive us absolutely bananas with a zillion emails that contradicted each other. I sort of feel like, why didn't you just tell me what we're going to do like the week before school starts? You don't need to tell me now. I already have masks. I don't need to order more. Thank you for giving me an update, but I don't need to know every incremental thought that the superintendent has in his head. Thanks, though.
Yeah, the school board, they're like a child who just keeps on coming in and interrupting you while you're trying to get work.
Yes, right. Like, I'm trying to have my summer, and they're like, by the way, masks. Oh, and by the way, and we're going to sit 6 feet apart. And I'm like, shut up. I'm having my summer. So I'm trying not to think about you people in school.
You know, by the way, I will tell you that when you brought up the idea of kids going into school with masks on, you know, the relaxation of the presence of masks has in one way or another led to both of my kids having the sniffles for the first time in 16 months.
That sucks.
You know?
Yeah. I missed the mask for that reason. It
did
was nice
not
to
that.
Not worry about it. Yeah. Yeah. That was an interesting side effect, right? That you became very, I know I became hyper aware of my health. And then I realized that I didn't get sick at all. And then anytime I felt slightly off, I was so focused on it that I realized, like, hey, I really do have seasonal allergies, or I was able to kind of figure out what was going on with me, because I was sure it wasn't a virus, because I was in the house for 18 months.
Right.
But yeah, that sucks. I hope they feel better soon. Andrew, I have a crazy second segment right now. This is one of those, I had no idea this was going on, and holy shit, this is what's happening outside the US stories.
Tell me, what is this? What is going on outside of this country?
Well, apparently people are climbing mountains. They're climbing Mount Everest, and there's like been COVID breakouts like on Mount Everest, and Nepal, its government is denying all knowledge of it, despite the fact that all of these mountain climbers are coming down with COVID.
What on earth?
I know, right? Apparently, there was a Sherpa, and I'm very confused. I don't know Sherpa terminology all that well. I thought Sherpa was a noun, but apparently also it's this guy's name.
Okay.
Yeah, I looked it up. I'm confused, but there it is. You can work that out. But this guy, Mr. Sherpa, he was in charge of helping some prince climb the mountain. And this is like a huge billion-dollar industry where rich people hire Sherpas to take them up the mountain. This is like a life that I don't have at all. So, but apparently what was happening was there's all these small mountain climbing groups and companies that arrange these tours. And what has happened is there were COVID outbreaks among the tour guides and the Sherpas, and it became almost like a super spreader, which is, you know, thinking about a small mountain climbing group is pretty much the last context you would ever imagine would become a super spreader event. But that's what it seems like happened. And the Nepal government is acting like it didn't really happen and they're denying it.
That's wild. Yeah. And my initial reaction to hearing this is that how much more of an outdoor activity can you find? But right. Then again, in order to stay warm at night, the idea is to get into the tiniest space possible. And I'm sure that's where the spreading takes place.
So Andrew, it turns out that the way people seem to be contracting COVID on these trips is at base camp, because they all start there. And then someone has it at base camp, infects everyone else. Then they go up the mountain and find out that they're not feeling well when they're on the mountain.
I see. That would be the way that it actually happened, as opposed to the way that it happened in my mind.
Exactly. Also, and the Nepal government is saying things like, oh, you know, people always have a hard time breathing, or it's just, you know, a regular sickness. It's not COVID. And it's very strange to me that they're minimizing this, but I also had no idea that tour guides going up Mount Everest was a billion-dollar industry. Like, I just didn't know that that was happening, but apparently that's happening, and it's a major income source for the country. So I understand why the government would seek to protect it. It sounds like they're protecting it a bit much.
Yeah, they're adopting Donald Trump's approach to to responding to COVID as a threat to your economic health,
exactly.
Which is to lie. They thought, well, you know, apparently everyone's bullshitting about COVID-19, so we can too.
Yeah.
However, I think that approach is a bit played out at this point.
And honestly, if we're being honest here, Sherpas on Mount Everest, like, were not on my bingo card for COVID deniers.
Not like, on my list. Not
like,
on my list.
Those are not the people I'm thinking of. And quite frankly, when stuff like this comes out, that people are doing the most outdoorsy activity possible, it bugs me when this ends up being a way that they get COVID. I understand how it happened, but I just feel like, oh, that sucks. Like, it's not like they were at a, you know, birthday party indoors or anything like that. They were climbing a mountain, for God's sakes. You'd think they'd have other.
Laura, I'm with you. I'm frankly starting to become a bit annoyed with COVID-19.
Yes. And you know, to be fair, this is why I don't climb mountains.
Yes. You and Matt are in the same camp on that, right? Like, whenever I complain of some sort of a discomfort that I'm experiencing as a result of riding my bike or running.
Yes, we're inside people.
Yeah. Don't exercise and you won't get hurt.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I have discovered the outdoors during COVID. I became an avid kayaker and an avid walker. And I have all of the physical problems as a result of 18 months of doing physical activity. So for the next 18 months, I may go back to sitting on my couch and making sourdough bread.
I love it. And I love that this man's last name is Sherpa. I believe I recall that this work is something that does get passed on from generation to generation. And I wouldn't be surprised if that extends to the act of naming.
It's like the Sherpa family, and then they're all Sherpas?
Yeah. I'm not a source of information on this, but I think I
like saying Sherpa.
Yeah. It connects you to people that you know, who Cooper, for instance. A Cooper is a wooden barrel maker. People were once named after their ways of life.
It's the etymology hour with Dr. Andrew McDowell.
That's right.
You know what that means for me?
Yeah, your name would be too long, wouldn't it, Laura?
So my name was a misprint, and there it is. That's how I got it.
I love it.
Anyway, on that note, here's some ads.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, so we're back. And Andrew, you said the word before. You said Trump. So I thought I'd pick up on that and just tell you what's going on in the world of shit shows left behind by Donald Trump.
Yes. And you know, we say that lovingly.
Loving that he's gone.
Donald Trump is also a human.
Theoretically.
So with as much respect as we can possibly conjure, let's talk about one of the 12 billion shit shows left behind by the Trump administration.
Yes. So and to be fair, this really isn't anything that it sounds like Trump did that was so terrible. There are about 4,000 federal prisoners who were mass released last year. They were nonviolent offenders, and they were released from prison because prisons were especially dangerous for the spread of COVID-19, especially in the early part of the pandemic, when it just there seemed like there was no way whatsoever to contain it. So a lot of these nonviolent offenders were released. They were still on home confinement. And now the worst of the pandemic is behind us. And we got to figure out what to do with these people because it's no longer that urgent emergency period. So do these people have to go back to prison?
Oh, my goodness. That is a challenge.
It is. And you know, there's a lot going on politically because Joe Biden has a long sort of storied history with criminal justice reform. So there's a lot of people who are looking to any criminal justice reform type issue to sort of force Biden to live up to many of the promises he has made currently. But at the same time, you know, if the reason these people were released from prison was because there was an emergent medical risk, once the risk is passed, it doesn't really make sense to let them stay out.
No, it doesn't.
It really doesn't. It's not logical. At the same time, we all know that the reason why this group of people was let out is because they were nonviolent offenders to begin with, and probably many of them didn't belong in prison in the first place.
Yeah. There certainly is an urge for people who, like me, frankly, feel that there are far too many people incarcerated in this country and that there are far too many ways in which one can get incarcerated in this country. There'd be a feel-good quality to allowing people who are out for this reason to simply stay out. But one must be consistent. Why should they be allowed to stay out of prison when many thousands of other people who meet exactly the same criteria would be required to stay, having never left?
Andrew, did you just ask for the federal criminal prison system to be consistent?
I did.
I mean,
it's
that's
a reasonable
not exactly.
request. I know it's challenging to implement.
That's sort of like the foundation of the criminal justice system is that it is utterly inconsistent.
Yes.
But I mean, it is a difficult problem because on one hand, if the need is gone, then, you know, I guess these people should go back. But really, on the other hand, we sort of all know that if anybody was really scared of these people and feeling like they needed to be confined, we would never have let them out, COVID or no COVID. It's not like they let murderers out. So, you know, it's, I think it's difficult to grapple with it, and it's going to be a political kind of grenade for Biden, because, you know, at the end of the day, he's out there proclaiming how important criminal justice reform is. And this is sort of like a test case of 4,000 people who were released and they didn't cause any problems while they were out. So maybe just leave them out. Who knows?
Yeah, I suppose there are two moves. One is to say, announce late on a Friday that they're all going to be returned to prison. The other more creative approach would be to say that they're going to go through a process, perhaps an adaptation of the parole process that will allow them to apply to continue home confinement, and that there will be a further tranche of prisoners who are allowed to do the same thing on future dates and in future waves.
In some ways, the logic is very similar to the logic of many companies who never had work from home before, and now because of COVID, they were forced to have, you know, remote working, and now they're continuing it because it's just more efficient. So, I mean, in this situation, if you have these people who are nonviolent offenders who have been on home confinement, you know, they're not just out like living their regular lives; they're on home confinement. They're using the electricity and the shelter and everything in the place where they're living, and they're not draining the federal budget for this stuff, and it's still keeping them, you know, essentially away from society and not causing problems. You know, is it so bad for them to be there? And I personally am not somebody that applauds prison for the purposes just of retribution. I mean, I prison is necessary to keep bad people out of society. But, you know, the idea that people just society feels good for having people locked up to me is not persuasive. So, you know, I'm all for the practical way of handling these people.
I like what you brought up about the notion of allowing society to benefit from what we've learned from the new practices that we implemented institution by institution in response to COVID-19. Perhaps this is an opportunity to learn something about the criminal justice system.
Maybe if we just call it something different, like instead of calling it, we released these people, maybe we call it prison from home.
Remote imprisonment.
Right. Remote prison. But no, really, because that, I mean, isn't that really what it is? You know, if it works for your job, like, hey, why not? I don't know.
Yes. Anyway. The rebranding of things is something that one side of the political spectrum has learned far better than the other.
Exactly. So yes, rebranding, as long as we don't rebrand Sherpas.
Hear, hear.
I like the original Sherpa brand, Sherpa.
So do I, Allura. I have absolutely loved all of the extra time that I got to spend sharing thoughts and airtime with you. Matt's going to be back next week, and I look forward to hearing that show. Perhaps I'll be able to join the two of you again at some future time.
I hope so, Andrew. We need you. We need your voice, and we need all of your input and your wisdom. So thank you for joining me today, and I can't wait to see you again.
An absolute pleasure. See you next week, everyone.
See ya.
That's all for today, folks. If you like today's show, the conversation continues on Twitter at VaxonPod. That's V-A-X-O-N pod. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and tell all your friends to listen. Vaxon is a product of Offscript Media. Our executive producers are Matthew Zachary and Allura Nanos. Our senior producers are Brianna Seely and Andrew McDowell. It is mixed and edited by Brianna Seely. Our theme music is by Chair Model. For advertising and media inquiries, email media@offscript.com. Hit us up at contact@offscript.com to share comments, feedback, and make recommendations. For more information, visit offscript.com.